Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello everyone, welcome to F1 Explains. My name is Christian Hugill, and if you have been with us for a while now, you will know that this is the official Formula One podcast that answers your questions about the best sport in the world. And let's be honest, it is the best sport in the world because of our drivers. 20 superheroes blessed with incredible talent, ridiculous bravery, lightning fast reactions, and an uncanny ability to both drive fast and bicker with a race engineer simultaneously. But how do our drivers get to the ultimate, the pinnacle of world motorsport that is Formula One? Are they grown in a lab? No. Do they grow on trees? No, at least not to my knowledge. Are they sent away to a special F1 driver boot camp in a castle somewhere north of Monaco? No. Instead, a massive part of their development is through junior driver programs. F1 Explained at F1.com is where you send us your questions. We find the best people in the F1 paddock to answer them. And that's exactly what Jack did. Jack said, "Hello, F1 Explained. I want to get my son into karting with a goal of ending up in Formula One. Can you tell me about how F1 drivers have done it and how the team's academies work?" Well, Jack, yes, we can. Thanks to the lovely people at Mercedes who've given us special access to their junior driver program in the form of one of their drivers and the boss. So coming up, how do drivers end up in Formula One? How do driver programs work? Where are drivers scouted? And what are those scouts who have drivers' destinies in their hands looking for? Shortly, we will meet Gwen LeGru, head of Mercedes Junior Driver Programme. He's helped launch the careers of several current drivers, including Kimi Antonelli, George Russell, and Esteban Ocon. But before that, let's meet one of the drivers who is part of that academy right now, Dorian Pan, who is a particularly exciting example of a Mercedes Junior Driver because she's our current F1 Academy Championship leader. Thank you so much for having us here in the F1 Academy paddock. We're recording this episode back in Canada, and the paddock here smells amazing. Does it always smell of nice food? Because at the moment it seems to.
It always smells good in the racetrack. You know, it smells fuel,
yes,
or good food. So,
What more could you wish for? Fuel, yeah, and good food. Dorian, just tell us a little bit about your journey for those that are unaware. When and how did you begin to love racing?
So basically my dad was organizing some karting events and I was there with him on the racetrack when I was 5-6 years old, and I fell in love with this sport, watching races, and I wanted to do the same. Around 9 years old I start racing, trying for the first time, because I could have started before, but I was too small in size.
I'd heard this, that you were too small to start at 6. Didn't you have to wait until you were 9?
Yeah. That was very long.
When you're young as well, time feels so much longer, doesn't it? That must have felt like 30 years.
Definitely. So I did tennis for a few years, and then I did motorsport, but it was very long, to be honest.
So many of you racing drivers are very good at other sports as well. I used to race against somebody that was excellent at cricket. You're very good at tennis. Yeah. You the talented people, you racing drivers. What challenges did you face along your racing career, especially starting at such a young age?
I face a lot of challenges, but the main one was obviously the budget to find for racing, because obviously I'm not coming to a family where they have a lot of money, so My dad did everything to it, but he also teach me to give everything to it, you know, to go to people and to tell about my story. And so I find some sponsors at my beginning of my career, but it was never easy. And more we are, you know, going through to my career, more it's expensive, so it's even more difficult.
I think it's something that not everyone understands about motorsports, that so many drivers have to fight so hard to find money to finance the racing, work to find sponsors, work doing marketing, which we know is something that you've, as you say, been through. Something that can help drivers is then getting into academies. You're part of the Mercedes Driver Academy. How did your journey with Mercedes begin?
It begins beginning of last year, so 2 years now. I've been joining them for when I switched to single-seater racing, because I was already joining the Iron Dames project before, and I did endurance racing, and now switching to obviously formulas. I've been with them, and they have been fully supporting me from day one, and they have so much experience obviously in the junior categories and in Formula One, and they teach me a lot of things every day, and it's how you make things good, you know, to have those people around us to teach us the right things, and it's been a pleasure since day one.
And just give us an idea of what help you get in a driver program like Mercedes that you wouldn't get if you were, say, doing this on your own, doing a racing career outside of the program. What can they give you?
They can give us, obviously, some good advice linked to their experiences, you know. They have been bringing so much young talents into Formula One, into other racing series, and when you're not in this kind of academy, you don't get this advice sometimes. And when you're young, you need those advice to build up and to grow as a driver, but also as a person, because it's not only about doing things on track, but it's also outside the track. That is very important as well. So they teach us a lot of things around that as well.
Do they help you look at data? Are you able to drive the Mercedes simulator? Do you spend time with the Formula One team? How integrated are you into Mercedes?
Yeah, I'm very in touch with them during the race weekend, especially with F1 Academy racing next to Formula One. I have sometimes to go to the F1 paddock and talk with the drivers, with sometimes the engineers. And yeah, I'm asking some characteristic of the track, you know, some info about the track, about racecraft, about overtakes, you know, because sometimes we go to the track like Montreal and we have only 40 minutes of FP1 before going to qualifying. So it's very short time, you know, and you need to be very quick in action and very ready to race and to be
ready to go. And I mentioned earlier that we're recording this in Canada. You said to me before we came on air that you've not driven the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve before. Are you able to talk to the likes of Kimi Antonelli? Because I don't know if he's driven this circuit before. He might well have done, but you know, you are both young drivers, both coming into it, and then you've got George, who's practically an elder statesman compared to you two. Do you get to talk much in between the three of you?
Yeah. We talk together before the race weekend, and especially with George for Montreal, because he has some experience there. And so we are going through onboards, you know, and we are talking about driving and the characteristic of the track and the curbs usage, the, you know, the lines on the wet, the grip, the degradation of the tires. So we are talking about a few things, few important things to ahead of the weekend. That's going to help me, for sure.
Are they helpful? Are they good to you, George?
They are very
Kimi?
Helpful.
Good, because otherwise we'd have a word. That's good. F1 Explains listener Jill has sent us lots of questions about how young drivers are found and supported. So hello to you, Jill. Thank you for those. Jill wants to know, do you get given a mentor? And if so, who's yours, Diane? And how do they help you?
Yeah, obviously, from Mercedes, I have two people that is always with me. There is Gwen Lagru, part of taking care of the junior program.
We're going to hear from Gwen a bit later in this podcast.
Yeah, okay. And there is Stéphane Guérin, that is always trackside with me and bringing me some advice. Yeah.
Speaking of trackside, we are literally garage side at the moment. Is that your car being started? Whose is that being started behind us?
The most beautiful run.
It is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. Now, we've spoke a little bit about how you work with Mercedes drivers George Russell and Kimi Antonelli. We've obviously seen Lewis Hamilton supporting F1 Academy at a few races as well. Did you get to interact with Lewis much when he was at Mercedes? Because having someone with that experience must have been so helpful, and also given he gives so much support to the series.
Yeah, he was very helpful last year as part of the Mercedes team. He always been very much in contact with me, very supporting all the time, giving me some advice on and off track, and obviously being there and just supporting us. So it has been amazing to be close to him and have a discussion sometimes, because he's a seven-time world champion, and he was the one that I was following when I was starting racing, and he was the one that inspired me.
And obviously Mercedes support you racing in F1 Academy. How has the series improved your driving and your racing as a whole? Because I remember when F1 Academy first started, there was so much about getting people time on track. How much has F1 Academy helped your driving?
Yeah, they help us quite a lot. Obviously, racing next to Formula 1 and racing during F1 weekend, there is, you know, the grip evolution. So we learn a lot about adapting to things, you know, to the track, to the layout, obviously. We have a lot of testing next to the races also. We have five tests.
Sure.
In different tracks in the middle of the season or at the beginning of the season. And so it's very helpful also to build and to know the car, to work with our engineers, and to work with the F1 Academy team. So, obviously, it's very helpful. And he's also very good as a driver to know new tracks.
Yes.
You know? So then after, we can be very comfortable doing any kind of tracks.
That time on track is so important for young racing drivers, isn't it? Because you mentioned earlier the money. You know, time on track costs money. So that's so important. It's such a great part of F1 Academy. And obviously you're competing for the F1 Academy title again this year. You were runner up in the series last year. What would a title win and what do these race wins mean for you and for your career?
It's mean a lot because part of this academy already is very, very important, and being fighting for the title is even more important, and winning this title will mean a lot to me because I put a lot of work into it, but also for my career, because today F1 Academy brings a lot of good things in our career, and we need that to progress into the next level, and if we win it, obviously we have we win something. Last year they win, Abby win the full season of a GB3.
Sure, Abby Poulding, last year's champion, yeah.
Exactly, so this is very helpful for the future of our career. So it's the support, you know, around us that we need to progress and to go on. Yeah.
Dorian, we're going to talk to you a little bit more later in the podcast. Stay there, be back with more very soon on F1 Explains.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome back to F1 Explains. I'm Christian Hugill, and this week we are looking at how junior driver programs work with Mercedes. We'll be back to the F1 Academy paddock very shortly to talk to Mercedes young driver and F1 Academy Championship leader Dorian Pan. But before we do that, it's time to welcome someone to the podcast who we've wanted to speak to for a long time. We really wanted to know exactly how F1 teams run their junior driver programs. What are they looking for? Who are they looking for? How do they support these drivers from childhood to Formula One? Let's find out from Gwen LeGrew, head of Mercedes Junior Driver Program. Gwen, let's start with what may seem like an obvious question, but always worth starting with the basics. Why do Mercedes and other Formula One teams have junior programs?
For us, it's part of our DNA. Back in the 90s, the Mercedes Junior program was alive with drivers like Michael Schumacher, Hans-Harald Frentzen, Carl Wendlinger, etc. And we decided to reborn the Young Driver program back to early 2016 with Toto. And the reason was to anticipate one day we might be in a situation to need to replace Lewis and or Nico at that time. We didn't expect that Nico will retire end of 2016, but the original reason was to make sure we were ready to have a good solution and a non-made solution.
Yeah, sure. And Gwen, give us an idea of your background. Why were you brought in to be in this position as head of Mercedes Junior Program?
Yeah, well, first I was doing exactly the same job in Lotus F1 team before. Well, initially Renault F1 and Lotus F1 team. Before that, I was supporting and helping a young driver in the 2000s. He was racing in Formula Renault Euro Cup and in Formula 3. That's where I met Toto and Fred Vasseur and Eric Boullier and all these guys who made their way to Formula One, and I did follow them. I did race myself also a little bit, go-kart and rally.
So a fine background for your role, Gwen. And how do you find and choose these drivers? Because that's a task that I think would scare me. Go out and find the next generation of Formula One talent. It's like, right, no pressure then. So how on earth do you go about that?
I'm going on the go-kart races and I'm trying to find the guy with we can win the championship in go-kart. And then if we switch him in Formula 4, let's make sure we will win in Formula 4. And it's never a crystal clear, you know, scenario. We don't have a, you know, magical ball. It's just believing in our project and try to put all the right ingredients around the young talents and guide them and support them all the way through and make sure we are doing the right thing in order to help them to perform and to deliver the results.
And is it just boys that you're looking for? Because we've heard from Darian Pan on this podcast as well. Or are you right from an early age in the current era looking at boys and girls?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something we're actually very proud at Mercedes. It's something very important for us. 25% of our junior program at the moment is female drivers. We have Darian Pan, who is leading F1 Academy Championship. We have Luna Fluxa. We signed Luna Fluxa. She was 11 years old, mini European champion back then. She's with us since 4 years now. And she's still racing at the top level in go-kart, international level. And she won Champions of the Future Academy last year in front of 90 guys. And she will move up to Formula 4 this year. And we have also Julia Molor, a young French go-kart driver. She's 12 and she's actually the first one entering the program because of Drive to Survive.
She will not be the first or the last person to have discovered Formula One through Drive to Survive. And we absolutely love that. And Gwen, regular listeners to this podcast will know I've got some experience in karting. It always used to stagger me when I was watching some of the younger drivers who were younger than me in karting the age they started. They looked like tiny little people in these little carts, and there was 30 of them in a race, and it was just like watching little wasps buzz about. So what age do boys and girls start in all of this? Because it staggered me how young it was.
Yeah, well, some of them are starting, they are 5 years old, 5-6 years old. And when we really start to monitor them, they are in mini, 8 to 10 years old. And usually we are, let's say, making the move with them when they are more 11, 12 years old. So the last year of mini go-kart or the first year in junior. But it's fantastic, you know, it's where you see the raw talents, you know, what they have, what is their DNA as a driver. That's in go-kart, you can see that.
Does that work change with them as they get older? I'm guessing you mentioned that work at the very start. Of course, that's going to be a lot of getting to grips with the basics of motor racing, racing lines. You know, I used to get told a lot in kart racing, slower in, faster out, the art of going slower into corners, meaning you can get your foot down earlier coming out of corners and reach a higher top speed at the end of the straight, all of that sort of thing. How does that move on as these drivers get older?
Well, for me, the most important thing is, you know, when we meet them at 11 years old, they are already having 3, 4, 5 years of racing. So they are already quite experienced. And we can already clearly see their skills, you know, what they are really good at, what we need to improve. But what I'm more interested is the way we are developing the relationship, the personal relationship with them, and the trust we are building with these young drivers. If I take Kimi as an example, we know him since he's 11 years old, and the relationship we have built over the years was a key into the success he had in a junior series, and he's still having now. And I'm more focused on making sure we are developing the strong personal relationship together and make sure that the trust is there. The trust not only with the kids, but with the family and with the people around.
Yeah, sure. Is there an age where a driver you're looking at in the junior development program could be considered too old for Formula One, or too old to learn the necessary skills and talents to eventually make it to Formula One?
Well, it's a good question, actually. I like to start the project from go-kart. It doesn't mean that we are not having some projects elsewhere. Like I will take Noah Stromstead as an example. He joins the junior program. He was in Freca last year. He's 17 years old, doing Formula 3. And we didn't meet when he was in go-kart. We just met a bit more than a year ago. So it's a good example of you can still join the junior program even if you are not 11 years old in go-kart. So there is some possibilities, yeah.
I'm really interested by what you're looking for when you're watching these kids karting. Are you looking for the fastest racing driver? Are you looking for the driver that is winning all the races? Or are there other things that you look out for, Gwen?
Yeah, not at all. If I give you the secret, when I met Kimi first, he was definitely not winning in Mini. He was always in the top five, but he was limited at that time by the material he was using. And we switched him to the top team, and then he started to win everything. But back then, he was not always winning, but he was always there, whatever the track was, whatever the conditions were. And the same with George, for example, or same with Esteban or drivers like this. So it's not always the one who is winning everything. Obviously, it's obvious, but there is no really one guy who is winning everything in go-kart. It's very rare at this stage.
Gwen, I mentioned earlier, I used to race karts as a kid, and I'm the first to admit I was not good enough to make it to Formula One. There is no doubt about that. There is a reason I'm talking about Formula One as opposed to driving in it. That's where I belong. But equally, there were definitely times where you mentioned the equipment. There were times when I was racing against people who could afford to buy newer tyres, newer engines, newer chassis that would give them a time advantage over me. and therefore I wasn't winning. So what are you looking for in a driver that isn't necessarily winning? How do you spot talent over a driver that's had an enormous amount of money thrown at them?
It's a very good question, Christian. I have a very good answer to that.
I don't doubt that, Gwen, for a moment.
It's the reason why we are supporting a series called Champions of the Future Academy in go-kart. It's a arrive and drive series. So they are all using the same chassis. They are rotating the engine. And all kids are coming from all over the world. There is 6 rounds. And they are all using the same material. And that's where, for example, we did select James Ananiostadis 2 years ago. An Australian kid who is now winning everything in at the international level in go-kart. And he's with us since 2 years. He has finished second in the World Go-Kart Junior Championship last year in PFI in England. And he's actually fighting for the European title. So he's a perfect example of, even if you are not coming from a wealthy family, if you cannot afford the material, you can go through Champions of the Future Championship and be picked by a junior program.
And is that a series backed specifically by Mercedes, Gwen?
No, not at all. You can go and race there if you want, Christian, and maybe...
It's a bit late for me, Gwen, don't worry. But I just think that's brilliant, because that is key to making motorsport more accessible for people from different socioeconomic backgrounds. It's also key to spotting talent. So that's absolutely brilliant. And it's, you said you've got a great answer, Gwen. You absolutely do. It's credit to the Mercedes Driver Program that it's looking in pools of talent like this. It's absolutely fantastic. And drivers do, once they've finished karting, they work their way through lots of junior racing categories. And finishing karting is one example of that, Gwen. So how do you know when a young driver is ready to, for example, take the step from karts to cars, or then maybe take the step from, I don't know, Formula 4 to Formula Regional, like Kimi Antonelli did? How do you know when a driver's ready to take the next step?
Of course, it's based first about the results. It's based on results. So he needs to succeed and perform in the series racing, in go-kart, if it's go-kart. And the switch from go-kart to Formula 4 is also linked not only on results, but also on maturity, because we are talking about kids or girls who are 15 years old most of the time. And sometimes I did that with Alex Powell, for example. He was 15, so he had the age to move up to Formula 4, but I have decided to keep him one more year in go-kart because I was feeling he was not mature enough to do the switch. And actually, it was his best go-kart season. And then he came, he arrived ready for F4. But it's not only because they are winning everything in go-kart, it doesn't mean that we will necessarily switch them up. It's also a question of maturity. And same when you are in F4 or in Freca, it depends what you do, where you are, how you are growing up. We are living, with these kids, everything. They are with us since years, and we are sharing a big part of their life, personal life, teenager time, etc., etc. So we do have a very close and strong relationship with them, and I think we know very well when it's the right timing to go to the upper series or not.
Gwen, I'll move on from karting in just a moment, but one final question on it. I often struggle to paint an accurate picture of karting to those who don't know the world of it, that these are hugely quick karts. These are hugely big motorsport race meetings where teams are bringing huge, great big motorhomes, where the circuits are so much bigger than people expect, where there are people like yourself present. This is an enormous amount of pressure for sometimes 11-year-old, 10-year-old kids. And I'm very open. I mentioned earlier, Gwen, I was a bit rubbish. I couldn't cope with the pressure. How do you help kids deal with the pressure of motorsport?
Well, I think one of the basics, maybe it sounds a little bit stupid, but we are making sure that whatever they are doing, a test, a race, make sure they are always enjoying what they are doing, And this is very important, especially in go-kart, because even if they are winning everything, we are not sure they will make it to Formula One. And they need to enjoy what they are doing. They need to have fun. And it's a way to take off some pressure. Of course, when you arrive at the final of the European Go-Kart Championship and you are fighting for the win and for the title, you are dealing with a certain amount of pressure. But if you are not able to cope with it, it means for us you will be probably not able to make it to Formula One. So when it's necessary, we are putting in place some mental support. We are putting in place some coach who are able to help them to go through. So that's where I think we are making the difference. We are very focused on the human aspect of our drivers, and we are trying to answer their let's say issues by making the right people around them.
Gwen, we've talked about karting. We've talked about the transition from, you know, the junior series categories as you rise up the motorsport ladder. The final step on that ladder is the transition to Formula 2 to Formula 1. Now, Mercedes have got a really good example of the question I'm about to ask, because George Russell did win Formula 2. Kimi Antonelli didn't. And we know it's not as simple as that in terms of judging when a driver is ready to step up from Formula 2 to Formula 1. We've seen Formula 2 champions ultimately not make it to Formula 1. Ollie Bearman's another example, a driver who didn't win F2 and was plucked by the Ferrari junior program to go into Formula 1. What are you looking for from a Formula 2 driver to think they might be able to make that last big, massive step into cars that are nearly twice as powerful, longer races, more physical fitness? What are you looking for from F2 drivers to think, okay, they are ready for the ultimate step?
Well, first, talking about George and Kimi specifically, they have been with us since years and years. So we have monitored during the years, you know, their skills, and we had already the answer. Before investing into an F2 season, they were potentially having everything, all the skills to become Formula One drivers. Because when today you are investing in an F2 season, we are talking about millions of investment. You need to make sure they have already the skills to make it to Formula One. And the F2 is the last step before Formula One. So obviously, George did win F2, as you said, and we organized him a seat at Williams back then. And for Kimi, it was a little bit different. The timing was different. The period of time for us was also different. Back then with George, we were dominating the sport, and it was not the case when we had to make the decision for Kimi. And that's part of the reason why we have decided to promote Kimi straight to the Mercedes F1 team. Every year is a different year. Every scenario is different, and it's difficult to compare, you know, from one period of time to another one. But for sure, before they enter Formula 2, we already know that they are capable of, because we have already tested them into our simulator, which is the first step usually we are doing to see how they will deal and cope with all the procedures, how they are interacting with engineers, how they are approaching, you know, race support into the simulator, for example. This is things we are already doing when they are at the F3 level. And then for both George and Kimi, we did organize a TPC test with the previous car and our FP1s, etc. So when they arrived in Formula One, both of them were quite well prepared.
Gwen, at the moment, there are 12 drivers in the Mercedes Junior program as of 2025. You know, they're from all over the world, Europe, China, Jamaica, Australia, the UAE. With the 12 drivers, I happen to know, racing in a mix of categories, F3 to karting. There are male and female drivers. I'm aware that you could do a whole podcast talking about these drivers, Gwen. So I'm aware that we're going to have to be selective here. But just give us a snapshot of those drivers. Any you're particularly interested to talk about? And of course, that's not showing any sign of favoritism, but just picking a couple at random. Tell us a little bit about a few of those.
Of course, it's difficult to pick one specifically, but I would like to personally, I have organized, F1 seats for four drivers who are on the grid currently. And one personal challenge would be to be the first one to bring one girl in Formula One. And that's where we are very, very focused. So Dorian is, as we said, currently leading F1 Academy. And she's also doing Freca next to F1 Academy. We have Luna Fluxa will start her F4 journey. We have a young Manny Nuvolini racing in junior with learning and probably will deliver some strong results next year. We have Kenzo Craigie, who has been a world champion in junior last year. We have, as I said, James and Daniel Studies are all different, all coming from different, countries, they have a different background, etc. And, this mix makes the junior program super interesting because, again, each project is different and each drivers require a tailor-made, approach. Sure. And that makes our job absolutely fascinating because you don't have, a magic box when you put all the drivers and they are becoming, a superstar or a professional or F1 driver. So you have to adapt yourself and you have to find the right tools and keys to help them and to guide them and make sure they are delivering performance and results.
And I've asked this question to people on this podcast before, Gwen, from ex-racing drivers like David Coulthard to people who work in the fitness and psychology side of Formula One and the training side of Formula One. I want to ask it to you as well as someone that develops drivers right from the very start of their career. There is no reason, is there, why a woman can't be racing successfully in modern Formula One?
To me, there is absolutely no reason. And I think it's... The problem we are just having is maths, really. When we have 1,000 boys starting in go-kart, we have 10 girls. And we need to attract more girls in go-kart in order to increase the volume and to probably have more talents in go-kart. And that's one thing we're also trying to help push and support at Mercedes, but also, F1 Academy is doing a lot of work on that regard, and we need more girls starting in go-kart. But to me, there is absolutely no question. They are more than capable, and I'm sure it's just a question of time. No doubt we will see one girl in F1 in a few time.
Yeah, sure, in the not-too-distant future. And that's why Formula One Academy is so important, because it inspires young women and girls to think, yeah, that can be me, and go and get involved in karting in some of the ways we've described. And just finally, Gwen, and I promise I'm not just asking you this question to promote my other podcast that I do, but I do present a different Formula One podcast called The Fast and the Curious. And we spoke to Kimi on it not too long ago, towards the start of this season. And Kimi gave us an answer that went a little bit viral because he told us that he'd been doing his schoolwork and exam prep at the same time as being a Formula One driver, which our listeners on that podcast found amazing. And the clip went viral across social media and people were like, Kimi's still doing his schoolwork, which people found really hard to believe. That must be an element to your job, balancing these young drivers' progress in their racing as they travel across the world and across Europe to race, but also their kids who famously need to go to school.
Yeah, we are monitoring the school results, actually, because it's super important. And again, we are not sure they will make it to Formula One, and for sure they will not all make it to Formula One, and they need to have a life. And it's a big part of our responsibility to control and make sure they are still going to school, they are still learning, things. They still also have a social life by going to school. It's important. And We cannot just ask them to go and race 300 days per year in a go-kart. We need to give them the necessary time to go school, and it's super important to us, yeah.
And Kimi did say that he might ask George for help with his maths homework. I'm not sure whether George was much help with it. I know I certainly wouldn't be, but that's an area I don't miss. I don't envy them there, Gwen.
I have no idea how it ended up, this story between George and Kimi, but I know that back from Montreal, I had a brief chat with Kimi, and he was on his way for his final exams. So I'm sure he will be very, very relieved and happy to have closed this chapter.
It's funny you mentioned that, Gwen. We should say to our listeners, we're recording this interview just after the Canadian Grand Prix, where a lot of the drivers went out to straight to New York for the premiere of the F1 film. And Kimi couldn't because he had exams. If that's not the life of a young Formula One driver, balancing these commitments, then I don't know what is. First Formula One podium, straight into an exam. There you go. That what a life for Kimi Antonelli. Gwen, I found this conversation really, really interesting. This is rare insights into how Formula One teams develop and bring through drivers. You know, thank you for the work you do in giving drivers opportunities and getting them, you know, for us to be able to watch them on a Sunday. It's fantastic. So, Gwen, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to F1 Explains. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. It's absolute pleasure. And I'm always happy to talk about young drivers and to share our experience with the audience. So always a pleasure, Christian. Thanks to you.
Great to chat to Gwen. He's such an interesting man and very fascinating to hear about how junior motorsport is trying to put an emphasis on talent, not just money being spent. I really enjoyed that. I think that's so important. And earlier we heard from Dorian Pan, so let's get back to our chat with her, one of Mercedes' junior drivers. We've already talked about her journey, how she got into the program. So let's hear a bit more about life in top level motorsport for Dorian and her ultimate goals and ambitions in F1 Academy and beyond. Dorian, we mentioned earlier our listener, Jill, who sent us approximately 5,000 questions. Thank you for those, Jill. We're going to use another one of Jill's questions here. Jill says, sometimes we see you in the Mercedes garage during F1 sessions with a headset on. What are you doing when you're in there?
When I'm in the garage with Mercedes, I'm following the race. I have the radio, and I have the radio of the engineer, the strategy, Toto. I have basically everyone, you know, so it's very interesting and very important to follow like this, because you understand things, how it works, and you learn about Formula One and you learn about racing, and it's very helpful for me to be part of this and follow the F1 race.
You can learn so much, can't you, from just soaking up the atmosphere in situations like that. Now, F1, the Academy, is now on Netflix, so you are a television star. You are an international television star. You've also been on Jimmy Kimmel, haven't you?
Yeah.
Who, for those who aren't in the US, a massive US talk show. I'm a media geek, so I'm really jealous of that. That's so cool. Does the junior program help you with that side of the sport as well? Being on Netflix, doing interviews like this, because that is such a big part of being a modern racing driver, isn't it?
Yeah, it's such a big part of it, and it's important to also be able to share our story right and to inspire also, inspire the next generation. And yeah, I've been working quite a lot with Mercedes, with my team, around it, but being in the Jimmy Kimmel show or being on Netflix is amazing.
It's cool, isn't it?
It's so cool, and it brings the platform to a new audience as well, to the ones that doesn't really know a lot about motorsport, and now we are bringing a new audience in. And it's amazing, no?
It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Although I am actually furious with Netflix at the moment, and I'll tell you why. Because they must have filmed about 3 or 4 F1 Explains interviews last year. Not a second. Not in it for a second. They are absolutely seething with them at Netflix.
So I will tell them.
Thank you. If you could pass that on, thank you. I've passed it on to one of the producers. I was in the background of a couple of the early seasons, but not for a few years. I'm absolutely furious. That's obviously the most important thing about the series. Now, a woman hasn't competed in Formula One since Lella Lombardi in 1976, who is an absolute legendary figure of motorsports. Susie Wolf drove practice sessions for Williams around 10 years ago. Is F1 the ultimate goal for someone like you sat here competing in F1 Academy now?
Yeah, it's definitely the goal. And I'm here to win and I'm here to be in Formula One one day. It's my ultimate goal and it's the only thing I have in mind. We know it's still far, but it's important to do well every time you are jumping in the car. And obviously, I hope I'm going to be able to drive Formula One one day and being part of the championship, yeah.
And listen, you know, Formula One fans like me, we want to see women in the sport. Like, we want it to be the 20 best drivers in the world, and you want some of those to be women. It would be fantastic. How much do you think that things like the Mercedes Driver Academy and F1 Academy, as someone that's been there, done it, been through it all, how much do you think it helps with that ultimate goal, which the series, which Formula One as a sport so much wants?
Yeah, it's obviously helps a lot because obviously... the big boss of F1 Academy is Susie Wolf, and she has been through this. It's the best thing that we could have around us. She's the one that experienced this to bring new things into our career to make it happen. So obviously Susie Wolf has a lot of experience, and also Mercedes bring young talents into the highest level of sport and into Formula One especially. So being part of all of this is very important for the future.
You mentioned earlier wanting to set an example. And I know the first couple of seasons of drivers of F1 Academy, of which you're a part of, you are aspirational. You know, there are people, we speak to fans all the time who are looking up to you. You know, you're part of something really special in the sort of formation and founding of F1 Academy. It's amazing. You will be inspiring, particularly girls all over the world, to get into motorsport, to realise it can be for them, and motorsport can be for everybody. If you had any advice for young drivers, boys and girls listening to this, who think, I want to do it, what advice would you give them?
To do what you want in life. It's very important to go for what you love. And when you love things and you do it, it's even more natural. And if you dream to go to be a Formula One driver one day, if you dream to be a girl in this male dominant sport, go for it, because we have our place and we have to show that we can be part of it, and we can also win races and win championships. You will have obstacles, but when you love what you are doing, you can go through them and go for your goals.
Extremely well said. Brilliant advice. Listen, good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you.
It's been such a pleasure chatting to you. I really appreciate you taking the time on a busy race weekend to come on F1 Explains. Really enjoyed it. Thank you, Dario.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Really, really enjoyed this. Huge thank you to Dorian, to Gwen and Mercedes. I've learned an awful lot about the world of junior driver programs and how drivers make it to Formula One. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. We are now off for F1 summer break, and this is the perfect chance to catch up on some episodes you might have missed from the first half of the season. Some of my personal highlights have been our Ask a Team Principal episodes with the likes of James Vowles. We've had Lando Norris and Esteban Ocon answering your questions about life as an F1 driver. We gave you a guide on how to go to a Grand Prix, booking your tickets and all that sort of thing. We went behind the scenes with Haas to learn what happens in a garage during a race. And we had the boss of F1 on, Stefano Domenicali. He explained to us his role and what it's like running the whole sport. You can also watch that episode on YouTube. It's a nice little bonus too. Now, F1 has one more race this weekend before the summer break. Who will go into that break with bragging rights in our title fight between Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri? Can Max be totally ruled out? Well, F1 Nation will be on hand to debrief the Hungarian Grand Prix after the race. F1 Beyond the Grid has in-depth interviews to keep you entertained across the break with Alex Albon and Anthony Davidson, among Tom Clarkson's recent guests. And we are back on Friday, August the 29th. That is Dutch Grand Prix weekend. And coming up after the summer break on F1 Explains, we're going to be going behind the scenes to learn about what happens in the pit lane across a race weekend. The Sauber team principal, Jonathan Wheatley, is with us. And F1 Explains favourite, Bernie Collins, is back to answer some of your questions. There's loads to look forward to. Thank you for all the questions and lovely comments about the pod. Please keep them coming. F1 Explained at F1.com. This podcast wouldn't exist without you. I'm very grateful to be able to do it. I'm very grateful to be able to answer your questions. So to all of you who have messaged me in the first half of the season on my social media accounts, to all of you who send nice emails, listen, we really appreciate it. We wouldn't have a show without you. So thank you so much for listening and engaging with the podcast. We really, really appreciate it. As I say, keep those questions coming. F1 Explained at F1.com. We'll be looking at the email inbox all throughout the summer break to see what sort of questions we should be answering for you in the second half of the season. Listen, have a great summer. I hope you get a chance to enjoy some sun wherever you are in the world. I'll speak to you in a few weeks' time. Until then, from all of us on F1 Explained, bye for now.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.